Welcome back to Don't Call It a Book Club. My name is Luke.
The name's Dan.
Halfway through The Will of the Many today, up to chapter 36.
Mm-hmm. Before we get into it, Luke, I'm going to get us warmed up with a quick question for you.
Okay.
This is a sort of an estimation question, sort of a math question. What do you think is the most kidneys one person has?
The most what?
Kidneys.
The most kidneys?
Has ever had.
I don't... You, before we did this, you thought that there was a good chance that we had done this warm-up before, and it's not ringing any bells.
Okay.
So I think this is new.
What do you think? What do you think is the most kidneys anybody has ever had in the
world? What's the deal? Is it like... Because when someone's kidneys fails, you give them a new one without taking the other ones out? Is that...
Okay, so now you're sort of getting at the reason why it's not two.
Well, as soon as you said this, I was like, it's got to be well over two then.
So you have revealed what happens when they give you a new organ, which is they just put the new one in there. They don't take your old kidneys out.
Okay. I'm going to skip over three and go four then.
Oh, Luke. Four? Four.
Give me four.
A couple of years ago, was talking with one of my buddies who is in med school about how they do organ transplants. And he revealed this piece of information to me that is, they don't take the old ones out when they put a new one in.
Okay.
And so then the obvious question is, what's the max that any one person has of kidneys? Because they might, you know, if one transplant fails, they will just try another one.
Yeah.
But at a certain point, they're going to stop trying because they're like, this just isn't working.
Right.
And he told me, now this is going to sound like an older brother story of like my older brother once told me that this thing, but anyway, he told me, five was probably the max.
Okay.
Can you imagine? Like the
So my okay. My question around this is I want to get at why they don't remove the old ones.
So from my understanding is from how I remember his explanation, is it's more dangerous to take them out because you're like cutting off this other thing. Mm. They're not like...
It's not just laziness.
Yeah. And like maybe there's still some function in the other two. It's not like 100% function. Maybe it's doing something, but it's just like more dangerous to remove the old ones.
Okay.
And so they just leave them in. Because apparently we've just got a bunch of free real estate in our body cavities for some reason.
I'm sloshing around.
Yeah. Apparently. Look, you know what, Luke? I've been saying this for a long time, but it makes a lot of room for a venom sac to go in there.
That's right.
Or two, yes. Or even three venom sacs, and I wouldn't
I think
even
you could
notice.
Fit a lot of venom. If we're fitting three extra kidneys in here, I've got space for at least five venom sacs.
Well, and Luke, the important point here is they don't stop putting kidneys in because they ran out of room.
Right.
So we potentially have room for a lot more kidneys to fit in there.
Right. Yeah. Man, the human body is weirdly adaptable.
In ways it doesn't feel like it should be.
Have you seen the new thing where we're just going to riff now?
Yeah, of course.
I forget the exact details of this. Some listener, look it up if you're interested. There's some new medical procedure that like fixes your vision.
What?
In this weird way where they like take out a tooth.
Whoa.
And then they like implant it. And hang on, I have to look this up. Hang on, we're gonna pause
the recording, and then we'll come back when Luke has found the details of this insane sounding procedure.
Okay, hang on. This is Wikipedia. Osteoodontokeratoprosthesis.
Okay.
That's also known as, quote, tooth in eye surgery.
No.
Is a medical procedure to restore vision in the most severe cases of corneal and ocular surface patients. It includes a removal of a tooth from the patient or a donor. And then you drill a hole in the tooth and you fill it with a lens. And then you grow it in a patient's cheek.
No.
For a few months. And then it's implanted into the eye.
The tooth goes in the eye?
Yes.
What? Okay.
Or it's either the tooth or the...
Or the lens that was in the tooth.
Or the lens that has been grown within the tooth within your cheek. It's a thing.
This... Okay. No. Luke, because this is medicine that sounds like it was invented when, like, witches were a thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, this sounds like you go to a witch who lives in a hut, and she's like, ah, your eyesight's bad. Well, give me one tooth, and we'll grow it in your cheek, and then we'll implant the tooth in your eye, and it will give you vision of the future.
That's right. It's very much a spell.
Yes, this is a magic spell.
As we know, Dan, from reading sci-fi,
yes,
that really advanced technology just looks like magic. And that's what this is.
Can you, Luke, I want you to imagine being a physician who your patient's gone through all of this stuff, right? I mean, we're both doctors, right? So we can picture this.
of course. Right, we're that type of doctor.
Yeah. And your patient goes through all this stuff and you are like, ah, oh, God, we really need to get them vision, but how do I explain this? Listen, buddy. So you know how the last thing we tried is we like injected this thing into your eye to see if that would work? It didn't work. So instead there's this other procedure. Okay. Now stick with me. We're going to take one of your teeth. We're going to put a lens in the tooth and then we're going to put the tooth in your cheek to grow.
Okay. Yes.
And then boom, naturally. Boom, bang, tooth goes in your eye. What do you think?
Bada bing, bada boom. Tooth and eye.
And then you might be able to see. What do you think about that?
It would take so long to convince your patient to do this, right?
I would be like, this is a joke, right? That's my first thought is like, this is, why are you pranking me right now?
But yeah, it's apparently a thing.
Because, Luke, imagine, all right, let's say, Luke, for argument's sake, you convince your patient to do this.
Yes.
Imagine being the patient now and you have a tooth growing in your cheek. Imagine explaining that to anyone.
I am curious, like, what, because the cheek is like on the outside. Am I just like, is there a visible tooth just on my cheek with a lens in it? It's on the inside for sure, I guess, right?
I don't know. Then why? Maybe. Actually, yeah, maybe it's
it's like a chipmunk situation.
But like teeth don't normally go in your cheek anyway, right? They go in your gums. I guess maybe it's okay. Let's imagine it's on the inside. I mean, you got to be real careful if like you're like sunbathing or something and you open your mouth a little bit too wide. Mm. You don't want to catch the sun on that lens because that's going to, you know.
No, for sure not. You got to put some sunglasses on that lens.
Got to.
Man. It's great, Dan.
That's crazy.
How in the future.
How long has that surgery existed, by the way?
I saw someone post an article about it on social media like a week ago.
Can you look on the Wikipedia page and see when it was invented? Because this is either a surgery that was invented like last year, or it's a surgery that we figured out in like 1820 and we just like were trying shit.
Okay, apparently it was pioneered in the early 1960s.
That's too old. That's old to the point where we didn't really understand why it worked. We just we figured out that it did work.
Hang on, let me Google it because I don't know why I'm only just now learning about it. I don't know. There's new articles about it. I'm not gonna read an article in a field I don't know in the next 30 seconds.
Okay.
But something new happened recently with it, I think. But it's a thing. So listen, if you guys have or having trouble with your vision, yank that tooth out.
No, don't. Please don't. We're not those kind of doctors.
Point is, human body, pretty weird.
Pretty crazy. Speaking of crazy, Luke, let's talk book.
Let's talk book. Up to chapter 37. Up to chapter 36.
Yes.
Which is about halfway through.
Real quick, Luke, first thing, before we get to the early on in this section, we had this crazy arena scene, but before we get there.
Yeah.
Viz is like recuperating in the manor from his first injuries, right? He gets cut up by this sword.
Okay.
Yeah. And he's recuperating. And we find out that some of the clothing that he's wearing could be tracking him around, right? This is in our first section.
Uh-huh.
Like, bro's getting an implant, right? They've implanted him with some kind of will tracking device at some point, right?
Yeah, for sure. He's been asleep, like, with his injuries many times.
Yeah. They've done surgery on this kid. He has received an implant for sure.
He's got several implants from different people, I think, at this point, right? Because he for sure got implanted by the head of the academy.
Correct.
Earlier.
Yes.
Recently implanted by his father.
Papa Quintus, yeah.
And then, I don't know, we see it again. He passes out for like a week again this time. Somebody for sure implanted him.
They're implanting him with stuff. I wonder if they've just put so many implants in him that they're like fighting now, and now nobody can tell where he is, you know?
Right, right.
Like if they're all like the signals are all overlapping and it's just a bunch of noise because it's too many implants.
He's right, they're like kidneys. You can only get five.
Exactly. I was going to say, he would never notice, though.
But yeah, you're absolutely right. Because they never really explain how these things work.
Mm.
But it seems like it can be almost anything.
Yeah.
And be very small, so.
I mean, just like a little pebble. He's got a little pebble that they put in him. They were like, all right, now we're going to put the pebble in. We can keep an eye on him because he's slippery. He's a slippery little fella.
That's right.
So we'll have to keep an eye out for who's got the implant, whose implant's still working, I guess I should say.
Yeah. What do you think they're reading this implant data on, by the way? You think they've got like a little GPS screen?
This is a good question. I think no, it's just like a compass that they've got. It just points in his direction.
Oh, it just points in the direction. Okay, mm-hmm. I'm less concerned about that.
Well, I mean, Luke, all you have to do.
It's just like a hot or cold thing, you know?
Yeah, but if you move it a little bit, let's say you move it a little bit forward, a little bit back, you get a little triangulation.
I was going to say, I was hoping you would throw out the word triangulation.
Mm-hmm.
Great word.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I see you.
It's cooler. I think that's cooler than a GPS screen.
Yes, I would agree. A little more manual.
Mm-hmm. It's
more tactile.
Mm-hmm. We love tactile. We love tactile. Analog, okay. You could say.
Okay. Yeah, everybody knows where he is at all times.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's get to the arena thing.
The arena showdown. Yeah.
Yep. So they make him go through the sewers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And everything. Do you kind of feel like they could have kind of just come to him a little bit more?
You're saying that because nobody really knows what these people look like. It's not like there are wanted posters around, and they probably could have just met him in the arena somewhere.
Yeah, and or just like at the sewer entrance, right? Like this guy that he meets comes anyway, right? Famously.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's just have a, I don't know.
Yeah. But the ambiance, no, the ambiance was not right, Luke. It was not right at the entrance to the sewer. You want to have like a meeting chamber. Okay. You want to have like a,
okay.
Cause otherwise it's like, I don't know. It's like, where's the sense of gravity to this? If you're just meeting me at like the front door to the sewer, like This is a temporary. This isn't a big momentous thing. It can't be. It can't be something that's important.
That's like a hallway meeting versus versus like an actual meeting.
Right.
Sure.
Right. We need a meeting for this.
Okay. Fair. I was getting anxious because it was like, okay, we've got 20 minutes. We're changing clothes. We're clomping through the sewers. Then we're meeting, and then we're clomping back, and then we're like taking a quick shower.
I also agree.
Sponge bath, and then we're getting clothes on again.
The clock in my head was like, how do we have enough time for this? We do not have enough time for this. Especially imagine being the guy who's meeting with him, the Aventus or whatever his name is. Imagine being him, being like, God, we only have 20 minutes for this thing. It literally took him 10 to get down here. I have literally like 30 seconds to talk to this guy before he has to go right back. How am I supposed to convince him to help us in 30 seconds?
Right. We get no pleasantries allowed, I guess. No, how was your weekend? We're jumping right into it. And it's a big thing to jump right into.
Yeah.
One more time.
You need more time. Okay, you know that they have a tracker on him too, right? Because now that we get here, I've realized whose tracker's working, because they're able to find him in a crowded arena instantly.
Yep.
Of course they have a tracker on him. Of course.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway,
interesting little meeting.
Yes, the meeting goes all right, not great. But they seem to end on, like, okay terms, at least. They don't seem to be on the worst of terms. And then, oh boy, the tone shifted a lot.
huge tone shift. Before we get there, though, can I just say, because we get the big ship battle thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the path that they've taken for the ship battle.
Say more.
Because it's like 100 ships all at once.
Ooh, I see what you're saying here.
Give me a few at a time.
Mm-hmm.
I can't focus on all of these.
Much action going on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's not really any skilled maneuvering that I get to appreciate.
I also think like there's something to trained professionals doing something that just like guarantees a better show. Because what they've gone for here is the law of just like they've gone for just quantity. Like if they have enough fights going on, maybe some of them will look cool. Instead of two ships, highly trained, maybe even choreographed, get a little kayfabe in there where we like acknowledge it's not real, which also is like even in line with their whole fucking pretend ideology that they're like, no, we don't kill anybody. Don't worry. We just send them to torture for the rest of their lives if they do bad. Don't worry. But instead, if it was like, no, these are trained performers. They're doing these stunts. It looks sick, but it's all like practiced. It's all safe. And then you get a show that everybody can enjoy.
Yeah.
But instead,
but the one that we get, it's like a lot of excitement up front, and then even we see like it peters out a little bit, even though people are still like fighting really hard, and it's because it's overwhelming. It's just a poor design.
I would also just be so depressing to be literally fighting for your life up there on the ship. And the crowd is like, whatever, the main event's over, I'm gonna go get a beer. And you're like, no, wait, I'm still fighting, please.
Right.
Please think I did a good job. Please give me a pardon.
It feels like they did the grand finale of a fireworks show at the beginning.
Yes. Oh, Luke, you're so right. You're so right. Well, but it turns out, Luke, there was quite the finale later on.
There was quite the finale, yes.
Are we ready to get there?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Man, that was brutal. First off, just like our boy evaporating thousands of people at a time in the arena. Oh, boy. But also, Luke, I'm going to say that part of this is on poor public health and safety planning. Because you're telling me that this arena has literally one exit for tens of thousands of people? What if there's a fire?
Right.
What if there's like not a terrorism act? What if there's just like everyone needs to leave quickly?
Yeah.
What are we doing? What exit?
I have to take fire training like twice a year.
Yeah.
And it's always like 30 minutes of cramming into my brain that you should know the several exits.
Yeah.
Right.
And I get it. I mean, I get it. Okay. They're like, look, there's a big puddle of water in the middle, so there's not going to be a fire risk. But what if it floods? What if the like thing floods? Or yeah. There's a, I don't know, a tornado or something. Like, one exit, guys.
Was it literally one exit? Or I thought that it was like he kept...
So
I think there's maybe there's more than one, but like not many.
So from what it sounded like is they collapsed because the part of the crisis was Viz and what was her name? Aquina? Something like that?
Something Aqua or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. They were trying to leave, but everyone was crowding around the like eastern side of the stadium. But it had collapsed. Like he had collapsed that part of the stadium. So they couldn't leave.
Right.
Because like when they came back after he left her in the sewer and Viz came back, there were people just like cowering because they couldn't get out.
Right. Yes, you're right. You're right. I mean, even setting aside just like a disaster scenario, it's going to take people like on a regular day where we're all going through the same place. That's going to take forever.
Well, Luke, but I think you did already hit on the rationale here behind the organizers of this event. It's sort of like a basketball game in the fourth quarter where your team's already down by like 20 points.
Yeah.
This is that, right? Like the big event happens at the beginning and then people are going to be leaving throughout the
people rest trickle of out. Okay.
Yeah, people are trickling out.
Yeah. They're like, we gotta get ahead of traffic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't want to wait in that big line of cars. Like, I'm out of here.
Okay. Yeah. but anyway, very traumatic time.
Mm-hmm.
Very gross.
Yeah. Not good.
Pretty vulnerable to this kind of thing, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually have the note because after this happens and after Viz does his thing and we hear a little bit more about the fallout from this event,
mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people that were seeding died.
Yes.
It caused instability in like higher chains and in like activities that were relying on those.
Yes.
This... The upper class seems very vulnerable to this kind of thing.
I think, right? I agree. And I feel like this was part of the point here. Like, I think this is part of why our boy did this was because yes. It would really cause a lot of damage. Like it would more than just killing people. This was destroying resources and the whole system. Mm. If you kill enough people, then the whole system starts to collapse.
Right. Well, it made me curious how the will seeding works.
Okay, yes. Yes.
Can people just cut it off when they want?
Right, like if everybody went on strike?
Yes, this is what I had. They seemed very vulnerable to like a general strike.
Yeah, I guess, right? Like it feels like they should be. Because it does seem like Viz has been able to not do it, right?
Yeah.
So it seems to be within their power to say no, at least unless they're on like one of those sappers, right?
Right, right, right. Man, put together a big enough movement to do a strike?
I think the problem, Luke, is, and I was thinking about this earlier today, so the Septimi are benefiting from this because they're getting more will than they would get on their own, right? So even if there's not like a ton of them, each one of the Septimuses is benefiting from the system.
Right. Yes. Yes. They're better. Yes.
And
all the Septimi are better off than they would be in just a normal society.
Right. So now you have to rely on the purely the Octavi.
Yeah.
finding class consciousness in the midst of their exhaustion.
Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting.
Inability to get everything organized.
Too. Interesting. It's almost like the society is designed for them to not have enough free time or energy to seize the means of production, you could say.
Hmm. Huh, you think that's intentional?
Well, whether it's intentional or not, maybe it's just a natural consequence of how that society is set up. That's really interesting, you know. I think it's also amazing that we actually get some data. We get some numbers. Did you note this?
I mean, I didn't really dig deep into the data, but yes.
So the pyramid is like very strangely shaped. It's not. Yeah. It's not because a lot of them end in the sextiuses. Yes. And so you have.
Wait,
like,
do they end? I thought when he went into the math, I thought he was like, it was just that the higher levels were so vanishingly small, but that on like a statistical basis, they wouldn't show up when you were doing this kind of number.
No, what he was saying is based on how it should work, there should be like, okay, so he talked about it this way, right? He talked about if there were 100 people as part of the hierarchy, then there would be like, I think he said like 89, somewhere in the 80s would be octavi. And then like 10 would be septimi. And like 3 or 4 would be sextuses or something like that. And then like it's less than 1 for the higher ups beyond that. Mm-hmm. But when they actually like do the census, there are way fewer sextuses than there should be. Like there should be like 500,000 in the society and there's like 50,000.
Okay.
And so like the octavi and the septimi are seeding to like a lot fewer people up the chain than maybe they should be, right? So maybe the idea here is that the wealth is getting concentrated way more quickly. Sorry, the will is getting concentrated way more quickly.
Right.
In okay. some okay. way. But Luke, okay, this is going to bring us to another question I had though, because there's just a lot of questions for how this works. Like, where does the will that runs infrastructure come from? Like, where does the will that's powering these lanterns and the levitating trains and the detection system at the school, like, is that one person that's like powering those? That's like, oh yeah, part of my will goes to powering the infrastructure of the city. Or is it right. like, is it like automatic? Like what, how does that work? Could one of those people just be like, you know what, today I'm not levitating the lamps. Fuck it.
It does feel like all of these things have to go through a person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Rather than just through a like, automated system
mm-hmm.
is how I'm interpreting it.
Right.
And like maybe that all goes up through like someone really high up because they can collect so much and then they just like have a pool that all of these things are drawn from. That's my guess. But even that, like, it has its vulnerabilities, right?
Right. Hey, instead of killing a bunch of octavi, let's just kill the like 4 people that run the trains.
Yeah. There's a lot of details in this that I'm intrigued by.
It's very interesting, especially considering like I feel like that would be so boring. I imagine you have to have some conscious effort for where you put your will, or like there has to be something about it. Like
I'm going to say that there's probably a lot of, there probably is a lot of like automated systems that the person just has to like make the conscious decision to send the will through this system.
I see.
Is my guess. I don't think that they're like juggling. I don't think they're like, I'm.
Well, Luke, what is the labyrinth designed to teach you?
Ooh, okay.
Now that we're actually like digging into the technical details, the labyrinth is designed to teach you how to manage will, and it's to teach you how to like multitask and problem solve in like 4 dimensions. I think maybe there's a train guy who's like, all right, gotta keep all the trains running on time, gotta get the will, gotta send the will to the train, gotta move the train, gotta turn the lights on in the train.
Okay.
I think there might be a train guy.
Could be a train guy, yeah. Hmm. Maybe this is like, when they talk about applying to be like a low-level bureaucrat or something
mm-hmm.
like that,
mm-hmm.
these are the positions where it's like, okay, you manage the lamps in Sector 7.
You got to make sure they're levitating. Not too high, not too low.
We're talking 10 feet. I don't what's a reasonable lumen number?
Don't know. 600? Is that a lot?
Seems fine. Give me soft light.
We need the lighting to change over the course of the night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So maybe you're enterprising and you're like on Wednesdays, I like to make it colorful at 7 p.m. To give everyone a little treat.
Nice. Nice. We reduce the blue light. After 8 p.m.
That's right. Helps people go to bed on time.
Maybe. Apparently there's some controversy about that, so I don't know. Maybe it's real. I think it's real. I'm not a vision scientist, so I don't know. Anyway. Not yet. We're working on it. Anyway. Still a lot of questions about the will stuff, and it sounds like until we're in class 3, we're not going to really learn much about it. So, keep moving on up, you know?
Keep plugging along. Okay, do you want to go ahead and go to the academy?
Before we get there, there's one comment that really annoyed me. Okay. So Viz does this crazy act of heroism and is like hailed as a national hero for stopping this act of terror that's killing like thousands of people and potentially has the like power to really harm this society. Mm-hmm. And he is in a coma for like a week. And one of the first things they say when he comes out of the coma is like, God, we lost a week of training. Like, what are we're almost, it's time for school and we're so behind. Yeah, but also you have gained like national recognition and right. You're like, people love you. I feel like it's fine that you lost a week of fighting and practicing in the labyrinth.
It's a pretty good trade.
I feel like this is an amazing trade. And we should stop panicking that you weren't able to read one extra book before you went to school.
Right.
Like, it's a week.
Yeah. I mean, I think this kind of shows, I think, the difference between the approaches that we see from this house, the Telemus household, I guess,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
compared to the like terrorist organization that he would have joined, right? Because are you on the same page where it seems like they intentionally set this up so that he would become a hero?
I do believe that's the case, yeah.
Where they seem to be like, we need you to be in a really powerful position, and like this public heroism is a step in that direction.
Yes.
Whereas, I mean, I realize that his father just like wants him to investigate the academy, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a different goal. But also like, what's the deal with this? Okay. So, okay. They want him to investigate the thingy.
Yeah.
Why do they care so much about him like being super successful? I know that they covered this kind of in the first section.
Why does who care?
Like, why do they go through so much effort to train him and, like, make sure he's ready? And they're like, you got to get up to, like, the top class. Is it just because he would have more freedom to explore?
I think so. That's a good question. I'm trying to remember why. Oh, I think that's part of it. I mean, I think they also, like, want their name to be recognized better.
Yeah.
Right? Because the story is that his little brother killed himself. Which right. is a pretty big issue in this society. And so I think part of it too is just like they want somebody who improves their reputation. And it also makes it more obvious why he's there. Like, it makes it his cover a better story.
Sure. Yeah.
Because if he's just like dicking around for a month or two, then it's going to be kind of obvious what he's doing.
Yeah. Although, as we see when he gets there,
mm-hmm.
everyone knows, or like the headmaster at least is like, yeah, I know that you're here to investigate stuff.
Yeah, correct. Correct.
Makes it tough, a little tough.
Before he gets there, though, Luke, there are a couple of other things that we need to address before he gets to school.
Okay.
First, the system of authority in this hierarchy is so busted. I show up at your door and I'm like, hey, the boss, the head of the hierarchy, the top of the pyramid, told me I can do whatever I want, and here's the rock that proves it. And you like touch the rock to a door that it opens and you're like, no, he's legit. He can do whatever he wants. No, guys, no, that's not, you can't do that, because I just have to figure out how to make a rock that opens your door, and now you'll let me do whatever I want.
So your qualm is with the verification process.
Yes, yes. Like, I get that there's like a guy at the top that's, he just can tell you what to do. That's just very, that's how this whole deal sort of vibes. But the fact that he just hands you a rock and he's like, eh, you can try it out. It's like, we need a two-factor authentication, okay?
Right. He also, when he gives it to them, they're like, I don't know how to verify this. And he's like, figure it out then. And they do, but it's like, you should have a like specific system.
Right. Because if your authentication system is like one thing, then all I have to do is figure out how to fool your authentication system.
Right.
And then I can get you to do whatever I want. Because they don't know this guy. This is just a guy.
Yeah, they have no idea.
And you're not supposed to...
He's not individually high.
He's not high up. And you're not supposed to tell anyone that he was even there.
Right.
This is the perfect heist.
Okay.
Ridiculous system for verifying mm-hmm. that somebody has authority. The other thing is, Viz is concerned that he's going to get outed, right, as the prince. And that's why he's like still willing to work with our terrorist organization.
Right.
He's already outed, right? When he gained national prominence, like, people looked into him, right?
I mean, presumably, yeah. I mean, he was already probably going to be looked into because he was being adopted by like a senator.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, like, I don't know how much documentation there can be.
I mean, okay. First, Luke, he, as we were like approaching this, he was like counting on Papa Quintus not doing a lot of deep investigation, because he was like, if this guy looks too deep, he's probably going to find out who I am.
Mm.
And he was the prince, like crown prince of a nation that they conquered. He wasn't just like some kid. Like, there's probably painting, like portraits of this kid that are somewhere. There's like documents, at least. I mean, I feel like, Luke, he was concerned if somebody looked into him too much. Because also, here's the other thing, Luke. The reason he's concerned about being unveiled is that the story would be, like, convincing. That people would be like, oh, you must be right. He is the crown prince of that other nation. Because it's not like she's just going to tell people who he is, right? She's just going to say, hey, he's actually this guy.
I see what you mean. Yes, yes.
So if that's all it takes, then, like...
it's verifiable.
Yeah, if it's verifiable... This is like the most famous person now in this empire.
Right.
His new nickname is like Catenicus, which is the name of the empire or the city, the capital city or whatever.
Right.
Like, they know who he is. There's like tabloids that are like, did you know that the Catenicus is actually the crown prince of Sus? That's pretty sus.
Right. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
They know, guy. They know. Stop worrying about it. They already know. They just aren't doing anything yet.
It's fine, I guess.
Anyway, I just, the scrutiny on him for this act of heroism is, they know everything about you, dude. They know everything.
Do, for sure.
There's reporters talking to the head of your orphanage, buddy. Like,
I mean, you just, as we just said, a guy came and took your blood and stuff.
Yeah, they know.
Yeah. Maybe they just don't care.
I think that's it. I think they're waiting for the opportune moment. I think this is par for the course for these people, is they only act on information when it's in their advantage. And so they're holding it.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah. Okay. But let's go to school, Luke.
Okay. We're finally at school. We've all been waiting for.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I want to say, so the first like two things he does,
yeah,
are essentially standing up to bullies.
Yes.
And I'm gonna say something that's kind of, I'm not gonna dive deeper into this,
mm-hmm,
but I just want to say this as it relates to our politics. Everybody, like, all of our stories in which we like the person are like a person standing up to bullies.
Yes. Okay?
That's all I'm going to say.
Uh-huh.
We love that.
Yes.
As a society, we love stories where people stand up to bullies.
Yes.
Take from that what you will, other people.
Yes. Now, Luke, I do want to talk a little bit about his decision here.
Which one? The first one?
I want to talk about his decision to stand up to this guy who's going to beat up Claudius or whatever his sort of nerdy friend. Okay. He's known Claudius for like 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And this guy comes up and is like, your dad really fucked me over or whatever. Yeah. And Claudius is like, oh yeah, well, that makes two of us, I guess. If I am Viz, I don't know what his dad did. His dad could have been running like a Ponzi scheme and like defrauded thousands of people. And maybe Claudius is like on TikTok talking about how cool his dad is and how much everyone else is a loser. And how, like, I don't know. Or it could be even worse than that. Maybe his dad is like... There's so many things that his dad could have done that, right, you don't know at this point. You have no idea what his dad did. Maybe don't automatically back up the kid who maybe was talking a bunch of shit. I don't know. Like, you don't know why this kid wants to, why this guy is threatening to beat him up.
Right. Okay. You're right. But I think that this is kind of the point where, like, the vibe of this scenario,
yes,
if you just take it at face value,
yes,
is a bigger kid beating up a smaller, lower ranked kid for something that the lower ranked kid did not actually do, right?
Okay, yes.
And I agree with you that the smarter thing, if you sit down and think about it, is to like not intervene. But when you're an author and you're like, I want my reader to like this character, you make them stand up to bullies at whatever personal cost to them. And us as readers is like, I like that.
I agree with you, Luke. I just think it's incredibly risky because, sure, now you have to onboard, you have to be on the same side as whatever this kid is about. And I get that maybe the kid didn't do anything bad, but maybe the kid was like, yeah, who cares that my dad stole millions of dollars from the government? Who cares? You guys are lame for not thinking of it sooner. And now maybe your only friends now are people who agree with this asshole, who are like,
yes. Okay. Yes, I see your point. I do think that he gets... like, he spends a few minutes with this kid.
Yeah.
Which is not very long.
This is like 10 minutes.
But, like, you can still get a sense, kind of, right? Maybe.
I don't know. I don't know, Luke. I think there's... I agree with you. We love a story of a person who stands up to a bully. I think it was so risky without knowing. Here's the thing. A lot of these stories where the kid stands up to a bully, they're already friends with the person who they're backing up, right? Or at least they've spent a few days with them. Or they know the person's story. They know why they're sort of ostracized. It's yeah. so risky. It's so, because maybe everyone is like, maybe everyone at the academy has a good reason to just like shun this person in general, but most people don't take it to a violent place, right? Maybe most people right. are like, yeah, that kid sucks and I don't want anything to do with him. But now, like, now okay, Viz has to be on this guy's side now. Now he's like, well, I guess I'm on team, like, whatever this kid's about.
Yes, I agree with you. I just think if you're playing the odds, I think it's far more likely that the bigger kid that's going to beat up the smaller kid is in the wrong.
Luke, I will say the bigger kid seems to be cooler than the yes. smaller kid. The bigger kid well, seems to... Cool. I would say
cooler. I don't know about equally, but they both seem cool.
I would say bigger kid is way cooler because bigger kid's like, yeah, fuck the hierarchy.
True.
Bigger kid's sure. like, I love the fact that you're breaking the rules, and I, as long as you do that, I will back you up whatever you do.
Okay, yes. Bigger kid rocks, and we're all in.
We're all in with...
Idhin, I think, is his name.
Yes, yes.
But really, I mean, the better example of the standing up to the bully happens afterwards.
Yes.
Where he stands up to the other kids in class 7.
Yes. Yes. Which that one I think is like, no, like, I feel like that one does exactly what I wanted it. Like that one is no risk. That one's just like the perfect encapsulation of you're not being physically violent, but you're just like not willing to go along with the peer pressure to dunk on some kid. You're being like, hey, you guys are being assholes. Stop that. And accepting the social consequence of that, which I think is the true heroism here. It's not smashing that kid's nose in. It's taking the hard stance against peer pressure from the other kids your age.
Sure. I mean, I think they both, I think they're both two different kinds of it. I think the thing I want to say about the first one is like standing up to bullies at great personal cost to yourself is also good.
Sure. Fine.
But the second one, I agree with you, is more classical, I think.
And I think the second one, it would be much, I don't know. It almost feels like the second one, it would be easier for him to go along with it because there's a clear advantage, right? Like, right. There is a clear benefit to going along with what they're saying because then you get to be a part of the in group.
Yeah.
And with all the advantages that come from that.
Yeah. And it's a little bit less sudden as well. Like the other one, the first one, he had to like make a decision quick, right?
Right. So anyway.
Anyway, big entrance.
Yeah, he's making moves.
Actually, okay. And then speaking of the consequence to him,
mm-hmm.
he could have been expelled.
Yes.
Because people in the lower classes, like, don't have rights, basically.
Correct.
When confronted by... This is, like, I understand that this is the hierarchy, and that's kind of mimics, like, the society at whole, but even more so the, like, military structure.
Yeah.
Where you, like, can't question people above you. Mm-hmm. I get that. But from a, like... From a school standpoint, it doesn't work.
Say more.
Because like the point of this school is for people to start at a certain level and to like move between them as you learn more about their abilities.
Is it though?
I mean, okay. I realize that in practice it's not, but but I'm talking in theory.
Okay, sure.
Because I do think that the headmaster, setting aside all whatever other stuff he's doing, like actually wants this to be a good school. And you cannot incur if you're trying to figure out who is really who like deserves to be in a higher level, you can't encourage them to be subservient to other people above them. And also, if the upper class can just like beat up the lower class, but then people in the lower class can then raise up to the next class, like they could just beat that. the thing I'm imagining,
you're saying it's a cycle of violence that doesn't end because they just keep getting ahead of them and then beating them up afterwards.
Right. Before we learn that our guy Aiden is cool, like Viz could have been promoted a couple times up to class 5, and he's just like, all right, now I'm going to beat the shit out of Aiden
because your ass. He can't
defend himself now.
Okay.
But then it's like, if that happens, you're not a cool person and you don't deserve to be in this class, so I'm demoting you. Because like that's not a quality that I want in my upper officers or whatever.
Luke,
it's a mess.
Luke,
it's a mess.
Here's the thing. Here's the change that I want to make. Because I think my understanding of the school is very different. My understanding of the school is finding out what level you belong in. At least they think you belong in. And so a lot of these people, yes, they're going to be subservient because they must belong at that level. Whereas Viz, he's not going to take it. And so he just belongs at a higher level. So he's not going to like... Now, when I say belong, I mean in their mind, what they think of as belonging. Because otherwise, in this system, how else would you rise up? Like, if you're always supposed to be subservient to the people above you, you're never going to have the resources to advance because that's not what you're supposed to do. Like, that's not what the system is designed to do, is to get people to move up levels. It's designed for you to get to the level where you are least likely to cause problems, I guess. And so I think that's what this is doing, is this is just saying like, where's the level where you're complacent enough to stay, and that's where you belong.
I think I agree. This is what I'm saying, that the theoretical use of this academy is,
yeah,
and like,
but I don't think you're actually supposed to be subservient. Like, I think you're supposed
like they could have expelled him for this, right?
Correct. I mean, and I think that's part of the deal, is like you have to figure out how to advance in the face of this like insane hierarchy that's like, yeah, you literally have no rights compared to the people above you. And you have to figure out how to, in the face of that, still move up.
Okay. I guess that's fine, and I can see that being the logic. If I was running the school, I'd be like, we're probably going to miss out on a lot of good people by doing
Yeah,
this
you don't say. You don't say this isn't a good way to run a school or a society? Crazy, Luke.
I know. It's a hot take.
It's a really hot take. But it also, big incentive to move up, Luke. Big incentive, because then you can just kick the ass of anyone on a lower tier.
Right. Yeah, which is awesome.
Which is really cool. Really cool.
Okay, let's see. What else is going on in the academy?
Can we talk about how low-tech the alarm system is for this crazy structure that they have that we find out at the very end that Viz investigates? This, like, glowing green ancient structure. Seems like an ancient structure.
Sure.
With all the bodies.
The alarm system, like, when he opens the door?
The alarm system is just, like... that when he opens the door, there's a little alarm that goes off, and the headmaster has to run down there to see who's there.
Right.
What? That's it?
Yeah. What do you mean?
What are you talking about?
That's the best way to do it. Yeah.
He has to run down there, post a guard or something. I don't know.
You got to get a guard. yeah,
because he shows up, he pulls up, and he's like winded because he's just sprinted from his office. Imagine if he's like in the shower or on the toilet or something.
Right. How much could a guard possibly cost?
Or like, I don't know, make a net or something that falls on them so you at least catch who it is.
Or, like, you're clearly working here. Like, people are doing work.
Yeah.
excavating this or doing something here.
Yeah.
Have some people stay there. Here, we built some bunkhouses.
Nobody wants to stay there, Luke. Did you see that tunnel? Who's going to live there?
Okay, fair
point. That's scary. That's really scary, Luke.
It is spooky. Okay, so he goes in,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And I realize that he's got to learn a bunch of stuff. And he doesn't really have, it's not like learn this much and then you're done.
Right? Yeah.
He needs to learn as much as he can.
Mm-hmm.
And so he keeps going. And I don't necessarily agree with how far he goes to investigate.
Mm.
But then he touches a tablet
in
like a room full of glowing dead bodies that are clearly ritually related to some kind of ritual.
Yes.
And it's like, what? You're going to touch it?
You're going to touch things?
You
never touch anything. You never touch anything.
You never do it. No.
This is a kid who has a lot of street smarts too, Luke. This is a kid who has like survived on the mean streets.
Right.
You don't touch it.
Think about the sappers. Knowledge.
The sappers, you're like, you have spent years not touching the sappers because you know if something could happen to you if you touch them. And then you're surrounded by these glowing green corpses that are impaled on these ritual obsidian spikes, and you're like, oh, I better touch this bronze plate to see if I can see anything better about it. Come on.
Come on. This could do anything. This could end the world.
Because it feels too silly to touch this bronze plate. You don't touch it.
You never touch it, yeah. Pretty spooky place.
Yeah,
I'd throw up some guards there if I was you, mm-hmm. as the headmaster.
Yeah, seems pretty important too. Seems like a pretty important artifact that you found for some reason.
They're like, we're gonna throw some floodlights up, but no one will be there to take advantage of the floodlights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. It's just more of like a beacon for people to find it.
Right.
Sort of like a beacon. But we'll spread stories about wolves. We'll tell them there's a bunch of wolves out there in the forest, and that'll keep them.
Big
and
boys.
Big smart wolves, so don't go around there.
Okay. Well, actually I kind of forgot to say this, but I'm gonna back us up just for a second.
Yeah.
So the students are like on the lower levels,
mm-hmm.
are all just dumb.
I mean,
like, I realize that it's more lazy than dumb.
Yeah. I think that's what Claudius was sort of saying.
Yeah.
Was that they don't really need to rise higher. So I think they're going to stay.
I guess class 7 is more like the athletes who are in, like, math 101 or something.
Yeah. Like, they're going to get their dad's construction company when they graduate. But they're in like... business classes so they can keep doing their fraternity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is a normal thing. I think this tracks then.
Yeah. This is a school thing for sure.
Good, good, good.
It is surprising to me how little interest they seem to have for like advancement. Considering that like the rewards for advancing seem pretty good, like it does seem like you can really set yourself up for a good gig if you do well in the school, but I mean, who knows, maybe being a Sextus is just a great gig already.
It could be.
Anyway, it's got to be better than being one of those bodies down there in the catacombs, you know what I mean?
I think so. I don't want to be one of them.
Well, no. No. But here's hoping we learn some more about that. Still a lot of questions about Will. Uh-huh. And I'll be cooking up a theory for next time. In the meantime, Luke, next quarter, Will the Many, we'll be back next week bringing the hot takes.